You're listening to KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9, Salida, Colorado. Again, this is Melody, and I'm sitting in for Jane today on her Scrambled Eggs program. And Scrambled Eggs is supported by the handy guy, David Meyer, offering painting, carpentry, and fix-it expertise. Handy guy can be reached at 221-3167. And while I'm at it, the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And today, I'm going to have Bob Chapman, who's been gracious enough to come on and be my guest this morning. And he's 72 years old, and he was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and attended Northeastern University, majoring in business management. And he spent 3 years in the U.S. Army counterintelligence, mostly in Europe, and he speaks German. and French and is conversant in Spanish. He lived in Europe for 6 years on and off and 3 years in Africa and a year in Canada and a year in the Bahamas. He became a stockbroker in 1960 and retired. Where did I lose my place here? And retired. He's owned his in 1988, and for 18 of those years, he owned his own brokerage firm, and he probably the largest gold and silver stockbroker in the world during that period. When he retired, he had over 6,000 clients. And so, Bob, are you there?
Yes.
Yes.
And good morning.
Good morning. And before I go any further, I just wanted to say thank you, Patrick, for another good hard-boiled this morning. And while we're at it, Bob, is there anything else you want to add to what I had said about your background?
No, I'm a little older now. I'm 73.
Oh, okay.
I'm getting there. And I've had a very interesting life. I lived over half the world. And I've lived the last 7 years outside the United States as well. And the viewpoint from afar is far more objective than it is when you're up close to something. So I get a better viewpoint of what's going on in the United States and the world, actually.
And you're very active in doing radio while you're at it.
Yeah, I do about 30 programs a week, plus we publish the International Forecaster in the email form on Wednesdays and Saturday. Runs about 40 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month as well for those who are not on the net. So we got plenty to do.
Okay, you might explain how somebody can get this International Forecaster while you're at it.
Well, it's about business, finance, economic, social, political issues all over the world. And if you go to any of the three places I'm going to give you, you can get a free introductory copy. First is our site, The International Forecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. You can email us at Bob, B-O-B, at INT, F-O-R-E, CASTER.com, Bob at intforecaster.com, or you can call toll free 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188, and you can get your copy, either hard copy or you can get an email copy.
And I wanted to add one other thing here, too. While I usually forget what I'm doing, doing these morning programs, is to say something about the program that I do at night, is Truth Quest on Tuesday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. And it's also, all my programs are archived at www.givemesometruth.info, www.givemesometruth.info. Bob, since with your background, why don't you go into what's going on economically and kind of give people an idea of what you cover in your letter?
Well, I spent 50 years in finance and economics and all the things that go along with them, such as the political and social issues. I think the most important things today are that anybody with any sense knows that there's no difference between either political party. We just saw a seamless passing of the baton from the last to the newest administration. And Team A replaced Team B. And there was really no change. And Team A and Team B both are all members of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, and they all believe in world government. And so I think people are finally realizing for how many years we've been taken advantage of. Secondly, some of the proposals go beyond what that have been presented by the president and pushed by his party. These issues, such as cap and trade and the health issue, I think is going to have a hard time getting passed. But if it does get passed, it will increase the amount of cost by about 20%. Secondly, cap and trade is one of the biggest scams ever. It has nothing to do with global warming because, well, global warming doesn't exist. It's about putting 20% taxation on the public for the use of things that are causing this fictitious CO2 global warming problem. Now, government already controls 5% through regulation of GDP, and that would put them up at 30% plus all the government employees. And so government is controlling probably half the economy at that point. And the Soviets were the only ones who ever accomplished such a thing. And this seems to be a combination of communism and fascism, but more toward the fascism, I think, how is it going to come out in the end? Corporatist fascism. Anyway, that's supposed to lead us to world government. In the realm of finance, it's very important that the Ron Paul bill, which is the H.R. 1207, to investigate the Federal Reserve, Transparency Act of 2009, has 255 sponsors, can't get out of committee because Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank are holding it captive. How long they can do that, I don't know, but it'd be nice if you informed them somehow that you don't like the idea and you want the issue voted on. It's very, very important. The Fed is a private organization, been in existence in 1913, measure passed by both houses. The ability of a private company to run the monetary policy of the United States has been disastrous, and it's a license to steal. These people have gotten mega, mega rich in the billions and billions of dollars. And these are the same people, the bankers, Wall Street, insurance, pharmaceuticals, many of the big international conglomerates. What they want is world government. So when the world government starts, they'll all be rich and the rest of the people will be slaves, and they will tell them what to do. And so the Fed's demise is important. And along with some of the things that are transpiring right now on Wall Street, what has happened in the last week is that it has been discovered because the FBI arrested a former employee of recent employment at Goldman Sachs for supposedly giving information that belonged to Goldman Sachs to others and then going to work for a subsidiary of a competitor. What has been found out thus far is that the United States government created a program and gave it to Goldman Sachs, a program to manipulate the market, a program to enrich government, a program to enrich Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs has come out and said that this program has the ability to control and rig the market. And they came right out and said what they had. And that's not very good. And in fact, it was rather dumb. So there's a big fight going on. And when all is said and done, if this is taken far enough, and unfortunately, historically, these issues usually get buttonholed, but if we can bring it out into the open, it'll end the rigging of markets by the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve, because they've been doing that since 1988. Actually, they did it before that, illegally. But it's been a long time, and most of the people who did it are dead now. And that's why the executive order promulgated in August of 1988 by Ronald Reagan, called the Working Group on Financial Markets, has to be eliminated by Congress, because our government and the Fed being privately owned, are working in concert to control all the markets in the world. That's not what America is all about. We're supposed to have free markets, and we don't. We have fascistic markets. And so it's extremely important that the Fed is done away with and exposed, along with the Treasury, for what they've been doing, it, and it to be seized.
Well, didn't this market regulation also, manipulation come about also about the same time they did the deregulation? Or did that precede it?
Well, it came in different ways. The regulation, new laws, the Graham-Bliley, I think is the name of it, 1998-99, the law that did away with the Glass-Steagall Act. And what Glass-Steagall did in 1931 or 32 was that it put a wall between banking and brokerage, because it was one of the reasons the market came down. And that wall was broken with this new legislation in 1998-99. And that legislation has led to all sorts of problems. Now we have brokerage firms as bank holding companies and all sorts of craziness. And the law has got to be rescinded, and we have to go back to what we were doing, and that is separating banking from brokerage and investment banking. And sometimes brokerages do investment banking, that's okay. And sometimes investment bankings do brokerage, that's okay. But not normal banking as you know it. So they have to be separated. And Phil Graham was behind that. Now, of course, he's working for a bank. I mean, what else would you expect? And so, anyway, the change in law allowed securitization of things, usually debt, credit card securitization, called asset-backed securities, which included loans to people who bought mobile homes, swimming pools, motorcycles, automobiles, trucks. That came under the ABS section. Then we have another section known as collateralized debt obligations, CDOs. And the CDOs were the ones that were more securitized, I think, than anything else. Rated AAA. In fact, they were BBB. The outcome was a subprime crisis, the collapse of the residential real estate market in America, which is still in progress. It's not over yet. And so it brought about the present credit crisis that we've been in now for 2 years with no end in sight. You know, after having committed $14.8 trillion, that's the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve, that's how much money they've committed for this battle to stop the collapse of the economy, which is what is going on. And it has been fruitless. The same people who are trying to solve the problem are the ones who created it.
And isn't it, but also isn't it the fact that that was their intent in the first place, was to collapse the economy?
Yes, that is true. And they did that deliberately. Now, one says to oneself, why would these people do such a thing? They are very bright people. They didn't make piles of mistakes. They want world government. They want to bring the United States and Canada and Europe in particular to its knees, financially and economically, and the rest of the world as well. But the three I've mentioned are the key. And they want to force them to accept world government. And that's what this is all about.
Where does China and Russia play in this? Are they accepting this too?
Well, I'm pretty sure China is, but Russia is an enigma. I don't know whether they want to hold out to the end and then challenge the Illuminists, or whether they're part of it. It's a hard take. And they still have what amounts to a fascistic government in Russia, as does Japan. China has a communist government. And, you know, where they stand on that aspect of it, I don't know. But Chinese have gone along with the program. And China's got lots more problems than what people realize. They just lent out twice as much money through their banking system internally in June as they did in May. Instead of creating stimulus and that would include loans of about $600 billion and stimulus of about, we'll say $600 billion to make it even. That's $1.2 trillion, and they've jacked it up to about $1.5 trillion. And they're not spreading it out over a year or two. This is being, you know, pounded right into the economy. Automobile sales were up 35% in China last month. And so they're creating a monster, just like the Western powers are doing, in extending all of this money and credit to stave off world deflation.
Well, wouldn't that tell you in its own right that then they're in on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, although they have done some things that I think that they've done unilaterally, such as accumulating gold, but and they also have been getting rid of dollars because they know they're going to take a loss by buying things which the U.S. and U.K. central banks don't want them to do. But they've done it anyway. Not 100% cooperation, but they've gone generally along with the program.
Well, and one of the things that, when you're talking about the automobile industry and that, like, you know, my understanding that Maurice Strong is over there, who's been heavy in the manipulations that have been taking place in the West, and if he's over there in investing or behind the automobile situation over there, I would figure for sure that would kind of tie him in, along with the UN, to being involved.
Yes. Strong, if your listeners don't know who Maurice Strong is, he's a creature that was funded by the Rockefeller family, and he's an Illuminist, a member of the Illuminati, which they all are, and wherever there is a internationalization of something happening, he's around. He was really the power behind the UN, being the, I think he was the assistant secretary. And of course he got caught in the middle of the oil scandal, getting kickbacks, so he had to resign. And he's also a big purveyor of the world rainbow religion. and he now is probably in his mid-80s, maybe as old as 90, I don't know. And so his days are numbered, but he's not one of the good people.
Well, he has a tendency to kind of put himself at the head of the pyramid, no matter whether it's so-called environmentally protective business or, you know, petroleum or various other things where he can, you know, manage to make money from it, correct?
Well, it's not only that. It's the one world agenda. I mean, money is not important as you fulfill the last 20 years of life. You know, that you have enough is important. These people are all on ego trips, and they have to leave some sort of a mark behind. It's sort of like dogs stopping at hydrants. That's what I compare Illuminus to. The world will never know who they were. Nor does the world of the future ever care. But they do, because they think they're special. They call themselves the masters of the universe. And so let them go on thinking about that, but it doesn't work that way.
So, I mean, what I was... Tell us a little bit about what's been going on this week between Bernanke and now. Isn't Paulson still in the middle of all this, besides Geithner and all that?
Well, Paulson's out of the picture for the moment. Geithner is a creature of Goldman Sachs, which has a revolving door between Wall Street banking and Washington. And they control our destiny. And they're the worst bunch of crooks I've ever run into, and I spent 28 years on Wall Street.
So they've always been that way?
Always. All the firms are that way. They don't care what the rules are. They do whatever they want. The SEC has never done anything to them for anything they shouldn't have done. And they're never going to, because they're an agency of government. And all they do is chase small brokers and brokerage houses and newsletter writers, try to put them out of business, shut them up. I've had a running battle with the SEC since 1967. That's 40 years. They've never let up because of my radio, and I used to do a lot of TV before during the 70s and 80s. And they've been trying to shut me up for years. Unsuccessfully, although from time to time I've had to leave the country because I've been threatened by government. But the whole syndrome of banking, investment, and government are all tied together, have been for a long, long time, and it's going to continue unless we stop it. And that's why I mentioned the bills in Congress and the Senate as well, to investigate and then hopefully do away with the Fed. And another thing that we need hard on the agenda is trade tariffs on goods and services. And you say, well, that's not going to happen. Well, it is going to happen because a trade war is developing, because the purchases are shrinking. Exports are falling exponentially in Japan and China in particular. They're off about 35-40%, and that's going to continue. Americans, which are the biggest market, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, were saving nothing. They had a minus 0.5% or 1% in savings. In other words, they were spending money that they didn't even have. That was the accumulation of debt. That figure 2 weeks ago was plus 6.9%. Now, you can't have a economy saving money and expect to have a recovery. So, saving money is good. Good for the economy, good for the individual, good for the company, good for the government. But when it comes at the beginning of a depression, which we just entered in February, it tells you that there cannot be a recovery as long as there's savings. The participation of the consumer as a percentage of GDP was 72%. It's down to 70.4. It's going to 64.5, which is a long-term mean. And there's nothing that's going to stop it now. Stimulus programs are not going to work. Beginning of the year, I said, the stimulus program, 90% of it will be used to pay off debt. I was wrong. 2 weeks ago, we found out that 92% was used to get rid of debt. I wasn't too far away. And that was a tremendous call, because nobody was even close to that. I was the only one that made that call, and I also said in January that the 10-year note, U.S. Treasury note, which was yielding 2.35% at that time, would go to 3.5% by the end of the year. Well, a month ago it went to 4%. So I was right about that. Interest rates were going to climb, and they have, even with the Federal Reserve rigging the bond market. I also said that by September there would be talk of a second stimulus package, this time $2 trillion, not $878 billion. And lo and behold, in the last 2 weeks, we're having talk, leaks, about a second package. It's not going to work. All they're going to do is gain another 6 months to a year like they did with the package that hit in April and will end the end of July this month. You know, the results of the stimuli. Part of the package hits next year, which is an infrastructure and other things. And that will help the economy for about 9 months. So next year, from January to September, the GDP will probably be about even. It's minus 5.5% right now.
So when you're saying the infrastructure, are you talking about selling it off or building it?
Fixing bridges and roads and putting people to work temporarily.
Okay. And
that's not a bad thing, but the problem with it... excuse me, I'm tail-ending a coal here. But what is the problem, and this is what FDR found out, as a result of the programs that were implemented under Hoover, and that is all these CCC programs, Civilian Conservation Corps programs, that were implemented, yes, they worked, you know, for 6 months or a year and a half, and that was the end of it. Example, during the Great Depression, as it's known, the unemployment rate was 25 to 30%. And we have varying figures on that, so I'll take 30%. And 1939 and 1940. In 1939, unemployment was 17.4%, and in 1940 it was 16.2%. That's the best they did. To get out of the Depression, they allowed America to be deliberately included in a war. They did that by sucking the Japanese into it. And they had the Japanese diplomatic code broken in 1937, both the British and the Americans. And they knew exactly what the Japanese were doing. And how did I know that? And it was declassified in September of 1967. Most people don't know about it. I knew about it because I was involved in counterintelligence during the 1950s with the government, and I had access to all those intercepts that were made. So I knew that the U.S. government deliberately planned getting involved in the Second World War by really forcing the Japanese to bomb Pearl Harbor. And when I saw that, I knew at a very young age at that time that our government wasn't what it was supposed to be. And that sort of thing is what set me on my life's journey of exposing the evil that had taken control of the United States government.
Well, do you think that possibly also the Great Depression and that economic crisis, that again, too, was probably an orchestrated event, correct?
It was. Yeah. Absolutely. No question. And they've done it over and over and over again. Because when all is on the deck, so to speak, they run around with their money, which they have control of, and they buy everything. 5 or 10 cents on the dollar. Then they create a boom again, the bubble again, and everything runs up, and they sell it for a buck and a half.
So in other words, if I'm understanding what I'm following in Argentina and the like, is these guys just like to keep going back at the trough. And they'll build them up and then take them down and build them up and take them down.
It's all orchestrated.
And that's just part of business as far as they're concerned.
As far as they're concerned. And the American public never knew that before. I did because of what I was exposed to. I was involved in counterintelligence the year that the NSA and the inclusion in the NSA of the Central Intelligence Agency, as well as Army counterintelligence, which I was involved in. So I worked indirectly, and sometimes directly, with NSA, which has become a monster, not only in size, but in evil. I mean, I would never do such a thing today, but that's the way it was in those days. And I even found out that the whole dichotomous situation between the United States and Russia and the Cold War was nothing but an economic game they were playing. And the minute they wanted to get rid of the Soviet Union, they just shut off their money. It's pretty simple. They also set the price of oil down as well. But they had financed it from its very beginnings. And, you know, if you want to learn about this stuff, you got to extensively study history. You got to take my word for it.
Are you familiar with Bernadine Smith?
No.
From the Second Rights, or Second Amendment group or whatever?
No.
Well, she sends packages. In fact, I heard it first on John Stapmiller's program. That's quite extensive in some of the documents that even show back in the 30s and 40s. What is taking place now was orchestrated and started or put into motion more so back in that time period. And
well, they tried it. Major General Smedley Butler exposed what they were doing because they wanted him to run for president. And he said, "You guys are nothing but a bunch of fascists." And he exposed the whole thing. And that's what stopped him, along with Lewis T. McFadden, who tried to get rid of the Fed during the early 30s. And they tried twice to kill him, and they were unsuccessful. Finally, in the third try, they got him. They poisoned him to death in 1936. So, yes, they did try it then. But nothing happened until after the war. OSS became CIA. NSA became prominent. I became involved, and I found out what was going on. But the key was, as we rolled into the late 1950s, early 60s, they started their move toward globalization, free trade and globalization, which ultimately we've seen lead to offshoring and outsourcing, and the multiple wars in between that provided great profits to these people. And also, we saw the the dumping of gold as a gold standard for the dollar in August of 15, 1971. And that, quite frankly, was the beginning of the end for the United States, because it allowed the people in power and in behind what we consider power in America to take over and make unbelievable amounts of wealth. And now they're letting the system collapse because they're ready again to institute a corporatist fascist society and create and implement a world government. And it, so it does go back many years, but they try it over and over again. And what they're doing right now was tried twice before that we know of in a big way. And that was in 1348, the collapse of the Lombard system, which was the collapse of the city of Venice, which ran finances for Europe at that time. It was also accompanied that year by the bubonic plague, which wiped out half of the people in Europe. And, of course, that had really nothing to do with the collapse of the Lombard system. Then again, in the early 1600s, the Hanseatic League collapsed, and they were run by the Medicis, among others, Cristoforo and some of these other characters. And that was equally as disastrous, only they didn't have a plague. But there's other minor ones that have happened along the way. And what they usually do during these episodes, like the one we're in now, is create wars. And that's how I was able to predict 9/11 and the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. And I believe that probably about a year or two or three from now, in that time frame, once hyperinflation has taken hold and deflation is beginning, that they will have another war. And it'll be an international one in scope. And I believe that if I'm correct and that war does happen, half the people in the world will be wiped out.
Well, in their project for a new American century, they pretty much kind of pointed out, at least in the earlier version that I saw, I haven't, you know, it seems like they kept messing with that document, but when I first read that, it looked as though they were setting us a couple of different scenarios, but like the United States was being set up as the world police, and then they had these different countries that there was enough of them that it could easily, you know, become a world war.
Well, that's the excuse that they use to neutralize the chaos that's taking place domestically, in this case, in probably many countries simultaneously. And so if people are concerned about their finances or eating, they're not so concerned about it if they think they're going to be dead tomorrow. I mean, ask somebody who's lived in Israel. And so the whole perspective changes, and so that's why they create these wars. I mean, we had a Second World War, and America was involved because America couldn't get out of the Depression. Not that Americans, among others, didn't create World War II by financing both Mussolini and Adolf Hitler.
And
of course, they finance communism as well. This whole thing's a game to them. A game based upon power, money, and the control of people, and the implementation of world government.
So, and since, like, when you look at, you know, the United States, being that so much of the infrastructure as far as organizations like your cities and counties and the country, states and that, are all incorporated. So they're being run like a corporation, and a corporation which has no morality, and is only about the bottom line, really isn't about caring for its citizens.
I think you're right. England may have lost control of America in 1795, but they didn't let go of their connections and power in regard to business and finance. And they've always been trying to bring America back under the control of the House of Windsor and indirect control of the European monarchy, which is the heart of the black nobility, which is known as the Illuminati. These people are relentless. They never give up, and the public never catches word of it. Now, it's different today because we have the Internet, and most people under 40 years old are very familiar with the Internet and use it extensively. And through that medium, we have been able to, along with shortwave and other means of radio communication, we've been able to tell the people really what's going on and has been going on. And government and the people behind government who control it are furious because it's just raising havoc with their game. Because the public is finally finding out who's been doing it to them. The problem is we can't reach them all fast enough. And, you know, back in 1960, when I got involved in this crusade, as you may, perhaps 1% of the population even had an inkling. Now today, probably 20% of the population knows what's going on, and probably an additional 20% knows that there's something dramatically wrong. We still have half the population living in darkness. They don't know, and most of them don't want to know. But it would be good if they knew, but it's not necessary. All we need is 5% of the population to swing the whole thing. And we've got more than that. So I think we're going to be successful in stopping these people from implementing world government. And if we are not successful, what it's going to lead to is revolution. And that's a game they cannot win.
Well, you know, and again, just to kind of hit this again, as long as people, I mean, I kind of view this as with the economic thing as being kind of a corporate takeover, and that they're, you know, monopolizing much of what's going on, and so there's another term I want for it, but it's not coming to my mind right now. But when we realize that corporations have no feelings, and yet we're trying to work within a structure where we're supposed to have ethics and feelings and that sort, they just don't mix. But that's just my feelings.
Well, we have an opportunity that we've never had before, and it's working. And the people who control governments are desperate. I mean, they are freaking out, and they've got some serious problems to overcome. And I think the only way they're going to be able to overcome them is to get in your face. And how they do that will be martial law in the United States, for starters. And that should bring about revolution. And if that happens, the military and the law enforcement are not going to be taking orders from government, they're going to be taking orders from the people. And the people who are causing these problems are going to realize that what they're doing is not doable, and the end is near for them.
Well, just the fact that people have to realize that, you know, if they're just printing money, then money is just made up. And if the people understand that and realize that they're working with an illusion, then we have the opportunity to change that system too. Correct?
Yes. And we will change it. And we will take our monetary power and give it back to the Treasury, and we'll stop the Treasury and Washington be from continuing to be a revolving door for Wall Street and banking and the control of America can be and will be put back in the hands of the American people. And the people who are trying to do this are not going to get away with it, because everybody knows who they are, and there's going to be no place for them to hide.
So, how does one kind of prepare for what you looks like it could be on the horizon, or maybe not? What are your recommendations?
Well, first of all, I think everybody, because of the employment situation, unemployment's 20.5%. If you want me to go into that, I will. But with that at that level, I think it's going to go to 35%. And that'll happen over the next couple of years. And if people can buy that from what they've just seen, then a lot of people are going to be out of work. So the most important thing you get to think about is feeding your family. So you should have 6 months' supply of dehydrated and freeze-dried foods, foods that you normally eat, available for your family. Second of all, you should have a water filter. And third, you should have the ability to protect your family by having some sort of weapon available and know how to use it in case bad people come and want to take your food or want to take your house or whatever it is. And so that's the basic rudimentary approach to all of this. Secondly, those of you who have wealth should be out of the stock market with the exception of gold and silver shares. You should be in gold and silver related assets, which would include coins. And you should be out of bonds, because interest rates eventually are going to go higher. And especially U.S. dollar denominated bonds. And we help people with that, people who want to accomplish these things and don't know how to do it. All you have to do is email us, and we email back and tell you what to do. Or sometimes I ask people to call. I ask them for their phone number so I can call and get them sorted out in the right direction. And so those are the basics. And each situation varies. We have a lot of people who have left the country, and there are a lot of others who want to. But a lot of people who'd like to really can't. And so, you know, I, having been involved in this for so long, can put people's needs into perspective and tell them what they can and they can't do. I mean, some people will tell me a story and for 3 or 4 minutes, I'll say, you can't do it. That's it. Other people, it's different. I found the other day a perfect couple to transfer, and they said, I wouldn't live in that country or that country or that country for anything. I said, well, stay where you are then. People make funny reactions to things. They want to go someplace, but, you know, they want it to be as comfortable as they've had it in the past, and it's not going to work that way.
Well, even eventually, it's a lot of this that's going on economically is going to, you know, spread out around the world, isn't it?
Yeah, everybody's going to have problems, but, you know, if you're in a country in Central and South America or Mexico that has already always had large amounts of poverty, they're not going to be as affected, because if you're in poverty now and you're in worse poverty 2 years from now, the gradient difference is very, very small. But if you live in Miami or Los Angeles, and let's say you've been experiencing poverty because you're only making $22,000 a year, however you're making it, and that's poverty to you, and all of a sudden all your retirement and Social Security checks stop, That's real poverty. So the gradation of drop-downs and the standard of living are far greater in the United States and in Europe and in Canada than they might be in, say, Argentina or Panama or Costa Rica or Mexico. And so the drop isn't going to be seen as a bigger drop. It's going to be seen as another negative adjustment. Do you understand what I mean?
I think so.
And so it's not going to be as bad in other places.
So, Bob, before we close for the morning, you know, again, you want to give your website and any closing comments?
Sure, the website, theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternational, F-O-R-E-C-A-S-T-E-R.com. If you'd like to email us, Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. That's Bob at intforecaster.com, or call toll-free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Well, Bob, again, I want to thank you for coming on my program this morning as I sit in for Jane. And my program again is usually Truth Quest with Melody on Tuesday evenings from 9 to 11. And I'll say good morning and have thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And again, the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and did not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And KHEN and Scrambled Eggs is supported by the handy guy, David Mayer, offering painting, carpentry, and fix-it expertise. Handy Guy can be reached at 221-3167. And coming up next is going to be Shannon Hemingway, who's going to be sitting in for Jane's second program, Americana. And this is KHEN-LPFM Radio, 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And did you have something, Shannon, that you wanted to put in? Or do you want me to just wing it and put it back on the program? Okay. So, okay, well, let me see here.
You got 2 minutes.
Well.
You've got 2 minutes of talking to people. Wake them up out there.
Okay, and that was Bob Chapman that was on that I had this morning. And again, he's like, he does like, I guess the last I heard it was 20 programs. Now it looks like it's 30 a week. The guy is quite busy at trying to get people aware of what's going on and to have the wherewithal to be doing it for close to 50 years is far more than I'm quite sure that I'm not sure I could do that, but he's also into the health food arena and does it. When you get his international forecaster, you'll also find out that he does have nutritional suggestions and that sort in there and towards the back part of the newsletter. And again, if you want to catch any of my program's archives on Truth Quest, it's www.givemesometruth.info. And again, I have just about all my programs are archived there, and I have a varying amount of guests. You know, some of them can get quite edgy, but you know, I'm just trying to find out different ways to approach truth, and I've definitely learned over the years that that's kind of subjective, and what one person deems as truth is not necessarily another's, but you know, that's kind of the way I try to approach it too, is so that we can look at some different means of what will stimulate people to start looking around and seeing what's going on, because there is a whole lot going on, because we've got some major legislation going on that people need to be aware of, because when Bob brought up the cap and trade that I believe they passed, then we've got some gun legislation, we've got some small farmer health food
nutrition legislation going on. There may be several different aspects of that, and one of them is Codex Alimentarius. If I can think of all the others, because it gets kind of overwhelming at trying to follow this. When last Friday they passed the cap and trade, there's another name for it actually, but they added another 300 pages at 3 o'clock in the morning, and of course nobody got to read it before it took place. Well, this one has a lot of things involved in it that may be involved with the building codes. And even then, locally, we addressed some things in the city this last week with the commercial building codes. There may be a lot of residential that may have been included in this, but the people that I know that are researching this are also trying to sort through it, because it's no easy feat when you're looking at 1,200 pages of legislation each time they pass one of these major pieces. And it's almost to the point of being absurd with, I mean, they've got a hate crimes bill trying to be passed right now. That one's going to be really quite confining. And if people don't start waking up and seeing that, our legislators are not even looking at this stuff. So, again, this is KHENLPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, and coming up next is Shannon Hemingway.
Thank you very much, Melody. Thanks for having the bravery to get on Friday morning with some real wake-em-up stuff. Strongly believe that we need a little more of that. You know, we all owe a debt of gratitude to those who are able to balance out all the music and fun in good times of this beautiful little town with the reality check of actually participating here at the station and in politics in general. Thanks for those who were participating in a fine musical evening last night. I just kind of wanted to sleep in, pretend it was still raining. Yet it's a really nice cool day. It looks like it's not going to hit 85 until, maybe another 15 minutes out there. So, nice to see that. I think we're going to start out the day here by wishing Jane Carpenter a fine Seattle moment up there, where we're not quite sure when she's on her way back, but we hope she's enjoying her time away here. Glad to sit in and help out a little bit with filling in for her after she started this fine station back in the day. Just another regular person from town looked around and said, "Hey, we need a local station." So here we are.